You know, there's an often used phrase that is used many, many times in our lives. It's called, and we hear it on the news, called the trial of the century. Such and such is the trial of the century. Now, when I was a kid, the first trial of the century was the Patty Hearst trial. How many of you remember that? How many of you don't remember that? Okay, some of you, not everyone raised their hand, so some people are confused even in the question. Patty Hearst, an heiress to a millionaire fortune, kidnapped by the Sinbinese Liberation Army and robbing banks, and she was brainwashed, and then, you know, big trial. Went on for a long, long time. Then a later one, now the new one of the century, was the O.J. Simpson trial, all right? And I would imagine there's always been the trial of the century. Well, in reality, there was, in fact, the trial of the ages. And that was when Jesus Christ was arrested. And then he spent time going through basically about five different trials, all the illegal. And we want to find here what happens in the midst of this is that people have to make a decision, well, who is this guy? Who is this man? How many of you have a Bible where the words of Jesus are in red letters? Now, you do realize that when they wrote the Bible in Greek, that they didn't use red ink at that time. That was not invented until 1899, a guy named Dr. Klopsch. And he thought it was a good idea. And here's something that I know. I look at my Bible, and I look, boy, a lot of red. A lot of red, and all of a sudden, the red letters begin to end. Just little bits and pieces. Some whole paragraphs, they're asking Jesus questions. He says, I'm not even going to dignify it by giving an answer. We find here that the focus is not so much on the multitude of Christ's words, but the power of his words and the power of what he's doing for us and with us. Passage here will represent three different types of people. The priests, representing the religious people of the day, people who had the light and were blind in the light. Then you have Pontius Pilate, representing the political people. He was in the darkness. The light was in his presence and he missed it. And then you have Peter, representing people like you and I. He was walking in the light. He had come to know the light. But he finds himself on one terrible night wrestling with the power of darkness. So that's what we want to look at this morning. This trial was a decision-making time. And it really is the same concept I would throw out to all of us. Is that what have you decided and what have you done with Jesus? The first group we want to look at are the priests, those lost in the light. Religious leaders had conspired against Jesus, put him to death. They had already made up their minds. We find here, starting at verse 12, but the Roman cohort and the commanders of the officers of the Jews arrested Jesus and bound him and led him to Annas first, for he was the father-in-law of Caiaphas, who was the high priest that year. Now, Caiaphas was the one who had advised the Jews that it was expedient for one man to die on behalf of the people. Let me keep reading, verse 19. And the high priest therefore questioned Jesus about the disciples and about his teachings. Jesus answered and said, you know, I have spoken openly to the world. I have always taught in the synagogues and in the temple, and where all the Jews come together, I have spoken nothing in secret. So why do you question me? Question those who have heard what I have spoken to them. Behold, these know what I say. And when he said this, one of the officers standing by gave Jesus a blow in the face, saying, that's not the way to speak to the high priest. Jesus answered, if I have spoken wrongly, then bear witness of my wrong. But if rightly, then why do you strike me? And Annas therefore sent him bound to Caiaphas, the high priest. Now we'll jump on to verse 28. then they led Jesus therefore from Caiaphas into the praetorium, and it was early, and they themselves did not enter into the praetorium in order that they may not be defiled, but may eat the Passover. What hypocrisy. Let's beat up Jesus. Let's slap him around. But we make sure we don't go into the praetorium because the Romans are in there. We don't want to defile ourselves. What hypocrisy. But that's the way of hypocrites. That's the way of blinded religious people. We find here that I need to give you a little bit of history of to set this up. Because the high priests during the time of Moses and David and the kings of Israel, the high priest was appointed for life. It was something passed on by her, by being part of the right tribe, and you were the high priest for life. When the Romans, when Pompey came in and defeated the people in the area of Palestine, took it over for the Romans thought, you got two choices. One, we can completely obliterate you, wipe you out, take you all as slaves and take you to someplace else. Or you can play the game with us. And if you act like good Roman citizens, we won't wipe you out. And you can go ahead and have your temple and so on and so forth. You just have to pay taxes and be nice people. The other thing they'd realize is that they needed to go and find the power structures wherever they were. And one of the power structures they realized was the high priesthood. And so they said, you can't do that anymore the way you want to do it. We're going to have to okay the high priests. Now, they could be Jewish, you know, but they have to be okayed. Well, that okaying process ended up being where whoever came up with the most money then got to be the high priest. One of those people who paid that bribe was a guy named Annas. And he was high priest from 6 AD to 15 AD. He had purchased it because he also knew that by being the high priest, he could extort all kinds of money and make money off of the temple trade. Outside of the outer part of the temple, the court of the Gentiles, he authorized to be set up booths to sell doves and lambs, all kinds of animals, a place where you brought regular money in, you couldn't use that. You had to have it exchanged for kind of temple money. That money then was given at extorted prices, and all that money went into his own special treasury, the temple treasury. Well, the Romans, knowing a good thing, they said, aha, we get some money from this guy. So Annas was it for a while, and then he decides, I'm going to hand this over to Caiaphas, my son-in-law. Caiaphas, my son-in-law. We find out that between 37 B.C. and 67 A.D., there were no fewer than 28 high priests. 28. Now, in the olden days, they would have served for their whole life, maybe 40 years, maybe 50 years. But the Romans realized that this was a way to manipulate the population. Let's keep turning these people over. There was an interesting exception, and that is the guy, Caiaphas. Caiaphas actually, of that, remember, 28 between 37 B.C. and 67 A.D.? Caiaphas served as high priest from 18 A.D. to 36 A.D., How was he able to do that? It tells me about Caiaphas, he must have been a political animal. Don't the politics of Washington just make you sick? No one seems to really be getting anything done for the good of man. You know, God forbid they'd pass an actual law that would actually help people. Just fight, 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 fight. Same thing was happening back in this time. So they find Caiaphas, and why was Caiaphas able to stay in there so long? Because he learned how to play the game real well. Real well. Now, we find here many things odd about this trial. Now, John really kind of condenses it, but if you read Luke, it's spread out, and Matthew spread out much more. We find that this trial was not legal at all. Here's some things about it. First of all, Matthew tells us that it actually had members of the Sanhedrin there. That's the kind of the supreme court of the land. Well, first of all, in order to have the Sanhedrin meet, you couldn't meet unless you had a quorum of 23. Next, you were not to meet at night. No trial could take place at night. And no sentence could take place at night. You were always supposed to sleep on it. Pray about it. If the Sanhedrin were present and there was actually a trial to take place, that's where it should have taken place. And it should have taken, and the only legal place for it to happen would be in the Sanhedrin's assembly hall called the Hall of Hewn Stones. If somebody wanted to testify against you, they had to have it corroborated by at least one other witness. A false witness was, in fact, one of the few things that were, in fact, capital punishment. Perjury. No trial whatsoever was supposed to take place during the time of Passover. Period. It's a high holy time. And lastly, the accused was to be able to call their witnesses first. None of this happens. Now, I want you to imagine with me. If Jesus, even if this was legal, and it was before the Sanhedrin during the daytime, and they said, okay, Jesus, you get to call forth your witnesses. He goes, okay. And he asked the head guy, do you mind if I serve as my own defense attorney? Okay. Now, who could Jesus call as witnesses? Let alone the Father, let alone all the angels. But he says, I'll start here. My first witness is Lazarus. Lazarus comes forth, state your name, swears on the Old Testament, swear to tell the truth, the whole truth. Yes? What happened to you? Well, I was dead, and he raised me from the dead. And then Jesus, yeah, and were any of you else there? And sheepishly, because we know that there was a lot of these priests saw this. Sheepishly, they're going, yeah, I was there. You know. Jesus could have called some of them to testify. So he sits down. There's no argument. There's no cross-examination. It's obvious. The guy was dead, and now he's alive. Next witness, Bartimaeus. Bartimaeus comes in. State your name, Bartimaeus. What's the problem? Well, I was blind, sitting outside the road in Jericho. Jesus was walking by, and I said, oh, son of David, have mercy upon me. He stopped, and he healed me of blindness. And there was a crowd of thousands of people, besides his family that knew it, well known. Calls the next guy, Simon. Simon, what was your problem? Well, I had leprosy. And I even went to the priest, and the priest, yeah, he came and told us about it. And he had leprosy, and now he was healed. Next guy. This guy comes up, and now this guy's wearing a suit. And he says, I just wanted to get dressed up for, you know, because I'm not usually that dressed up. And they asked him what his name. He says, well, my name is, I like to change it, but it's I'm the Gerizim demoniac. You know, trying to change the last part of my name. Well, what was your problem? Well, I used to run around naked in the graveyards and terrorizing people and gnashing myself and throwing myself in the fire filled with demons. And Jesus cast out all these demons. And now I'm wearing a suit and tie. I'm looking great. Now I'm they're going, wow. Well, can you corroborate that? Yeah, a whole village here, I used to terrorize them. Yeah, they're all going, yeah. You know why they didn't do this in the daytime? You know why? Because Jesus would have won. Hands down. Calls the next one. Little kid comes up. Well, what's your problem? Nothing. I was there by the ocean, by the sea, and they didn't have any food. Gave my sack lunch. And he fed like 5,000 people. Anybody witnesses? 10,000 witnesses. Pull up the next guy, Zacchaeus. They all knew him. Why? Because they used to get money from him. Chief tax collector. What are you? I used to be a tax collector. Oh, yeah, I remember. What'd you do? I gave all the money back for the people I ripped off. You know who also he could have called? Hopefully. He could have called you. He could have called you. He could say, you know what? This guy hasn't been born yet, but I'd like to call Gary Z. And he's got the power. He could have kind of done one of those, and I could have just been there. Well, what happened? Well, you know, I could have shared my testimony. Any witnesses that you've actually, hopefully, that your life has been redeemed and you're a changed person? I want to ask you the question, if Jesus that day, if he needed a witness, could you have stood for him? Does your life say, boy, yeah, these people can even vouch for me. Yeah, I'm a changed person because of Jesus. Friends, this trial does nothing more than tell me that these people didn't want to know the truth. And if you're here today, I'm not trying to make it difficult or mock you in any way, but I got to tell you, you need to take a serious look at Jesus Christ. He was God who came as a man. He healed the sick. He raised the dead. He walked on water. He fed 5,000 with a sack lunch. And he told us how to get to heaven through him and him alone. That he would come to be the Lamb of God that would take away the sins of the world. And please do not be like these blind religious people. They said, nah, that cramps our style. First group of people, once again, sad irony, very people that have given the most light were in the greatest darkness. So that's the first group. First group that they go before the religious people. The next group they go through before the political people, represented by Pilate. Let me just read that starting verse 29. And Pilate therefore went out to them and said, what accusation do you bring against this man? And he answered and said to him, if this man were not an evildoer, would we have delivered him up to you? What a dumb question. Pilate therefore said to them, take him yourself and judge him according to your law. The Jews said, well, we are not permitted by anyone to put anybody to death, that the word of Christ may be fulfilled, which he spoke, signifying by what kind of death he was going to die. Pilate therefore entered again into the praetorium, summoned the king, summoned Jesus, and said to him, you are the king of the Jews? Jesus answered, are you saying this on your own initiative, or did others tell you about me? Pilate answered, I'm not a Jew, am I? Your own nation and the chief priests delivered you up to me. So what have you done? Jesus answered, my kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would be fighting that I may be delivered from the Jews. But as it is, my kingdom is not of this world, this realm. Pilate therefore said to him, so you are a king. Jesus answered, you say correctly that I am a king. For this reason I was born, and for this reason I have come into the world, to bear witness to the truth, and everyone who is of the truth hears my voice. And Pilate said to him, what is the truth? And when he had said this, he went out again to the Jews and said to them, I find no guilt in him, but you will have a custom that I should release him, someone for you at Passover. Do you wish then that I release you the king of the Jews? Therefore they cried out again, saying, not this man, but Barabbas. Now Barabbas was a robber. Now let me give you a little history of Pilate so you understand what's going on. First of all, we find here that there is a little piece of this missing because John is streamlining it. We find not only the position or politician he goes to is Pilate, but also to Herod. And Luke chapter 23:8-12 tells us that. So he first goes to Pilate. Pilate says, I don't find anything wrong. I'll send him to Herod, pass the buck. That's what politicians do. You know, I'm not anti-politician. In fact, I think God's people ought to say, you know, I want to serve my community and do it in a way of truth and righteousness. But the fact is, that's typically not what happens, unfortunately. So one politician passes the buck to the next guy. to Herod. Now, Herod is the same crazy, worthless person who did what? Killed John the Baptist, Jesus' cousin, and one of the greatest prophets ever. Can you imagine Jesus being before Herod? Herod is mockingly saying, I've always wanted to meet you. Asks him a bunch of questions. It's like Jesus is some kind of a circus trick. You know what Jesus does? He says nothing. Got nothing to say to this guy. So Herod wraps him in a robe, beats him up a bit, sends him back to Pilate. Now, who is Pontius Pilate? Well, here's what happened. When Pompey, the Roman legion guy, came in and took over Palestine, one of the people to help the family were the family of the Herods. They were taken back, Herod the Great then, taken to, actually to Rome, where he made friends with the emperor. They sent him back saying, we're going to allow you to be king as long as you continue to be our ally. Okay. So Herod the Great, ruthless person, someone said it would be better, it would be safer to be his dog than to be his son. Why? Because he killed a bunch of his kids because they thought they were going to try to take over. He's the same Herod that when Jesus was born tried to do what? Kill the babies. Okay? In 4 BC, he died and left his kingdom to three of his sons. To Antipas, who was given Galilee. To Philip, who was given the northlands, north of Galilee, even as far almost as Damascus. And Archelaus, who was given Judea and Samaria. Okay? Now, the first two guys, Antipas and Philip, they ruled fairly well. But Archelaus did not. He really upset the Jews, did all kinds of stuff, stole from them, extorted money from them. And so what happened was this, is that they decided, we're going to write a letter to the emperor and complain. And they complained, and Archelaus was removed. And sure enough, the person put in his place was Pontius Pilate. That area now became a troubled zone, and they needed to have a military man who could come in and help control it. Two different kinds of provinces with the Romans. One was a province that was under control, and the Roman Senate itself controlled that. No problems, Roman Senate. But if you were a province that had trouble, then you were directly being controlled by the legions who were answerable to Caesar himself. And Judea was one of those places, was a trouble spot. So there we are. The fact is that they were not, Pontius Pilate was not well liked by the Jews. Two reasons. One is that the Jews before, the Romans before, knew that the Jews didn't like graven images. And so the Romans didn't have a flag, but they had a pole. And what was on top of the pole, anyone? An eagle. So they walk around, Romans are in town, eagles on the pole. And that was not to be done in Jerusalem because it was considered to be an idol. Pilate says, I don't care what you think. I'm going to put these standards anywhere I want. They didn't like him. The other thing was he realized that the water supply of Jerusalem was suspect. So he goes and robs the temple treasury to build the aqueduct. So they didn't like him much. Now, what does that mean about anything? It tells us here is that they came and they brought the religious leaders, made some trumped up charges, and it tells us in Luke 23, 1 and 2, the three charges they give the Pilate about Jesus. Then the whole body of them arose and brought before him before Pilate, and they began to accuse him. He says, we have found this man misleading our nation and forbidding them to pay taxes to Caesar, saying that he himself is the Christ, the King. Now, before that, he said, oh, yeah, he has made himself out to be a king or a prophet. And basically here, they're saying that he is a traitor, telling people to not pay their taxes and telling him he wants to be a king. So that's where it was. Pilate then, being a political guy, tried to be shrewd. Says, I find no fault in him. You guys take care of yourself. They wouldn't take no for an answer. They finally, at the end here in chapter 19, they say this in verse here, starting verse 1. Then Pilate therefore took Jesus and scourged him. The soldiers wove a crown of thorns and put it on his head and arrayed him in a purple robe. And they began come to him and saying, Hail, King of the Jews, and give him blows in the face. You know, this is where the real torturous thing starts. And we'll pick that up next week when we go through the crucifixion. Hey, friends, Pilate is not some poor guy. Oh, what do I do with Jesus? Oh, no. This guy was a brutal, brutal, brutal person. It tells us that when he sent him off to Herod and Herod sent him back mocking him, that from that day on, Herod and Pilate were friends. Friends, any friend of Herod is not a friend of mine. Kills a prophet of God, debaucherous, wicked man, mocking Jesus. That's the kind of guy that Pilate was. Scholars are debating as to what happens to Pilate. Some have this thing where the rest of his life he's washing his hands. You know, he washed his hands of this. You know, it's their fault. That the rest of his life he couldn't stop washing his hands. It's not in the Bible. There's one tradition that he messed up, and this is true, happened in history, that he overreacted to something that happened in Samaria, and he wiped out a whole village of people. People complained. He was sent back to have trial in Rome. And before he got there, the Caesar died. It was Tiberius. He died. And ultimately, he would die there. Some say he would kill himself. They would cremate him, and they tried to throw his ashes into the Tiber River, but the Tiber River wouldn't accept the ashes. Now, that's legend. All right? In fact, they threw him in, and it bubbled, and threw the ashes back out. So that's one legend. Then they said, okay, I guess we shouldn't take... So they took him up to Gaul, which is modern-day France and Germany. We'll bury him up there, put him in the Rhone River. Well, the same thing happened with the Rhone River. So they found some place by some mountain. They buried him there. And you can go today as Mount Pilate, someplace in Austria, I think. There's another tradition that Pilate's wife, who was warned in a dream, that Pilate's wife came to Christ, became a believer, and that she led Pontius Pilate to the Lord. And in fact, the Coptic church, which was the early church in northern Africa, has actually both Pilate's wife and Pontius Pilate as saints. Now, what does that have to do with anything? Here's what it has to do with. Is that one group of people were religious people who knew, they already knew this stuff. They should, if they wanted to have a trial, have it during the daytime. Call all the witnesses. They didn't want to have that trial. And here's what I would say. When people take a look at Jesus in the light, you can't help but respond. He's either lying completely, made all this stuff up, or he is, in fact, the Lord. We have Pilate here who rejects. He somehow thinks that he can wash his hands of it. There are some things in life you can never wash your hands of. You can be forgiven, but you can't wash your hands of it. Now, here's the last one. Peter. Let's read here, starting at verse 15. Peter was following Jesus. And so was another disciple. Now that disciple was known to the high priest and entered with Jesus into the court of the high priest. But Peter was standing at the door, so that the other disciple who was known to the high priest went out and spoke to the doorkeeper and brought in Peter. The slave girl, therefore, who had kept the door, said to Peter, Are you not the one of the man's disciples, are you? He says, I'm not. Now the slaves of the officers were standing there having made a charcoal fire. For it was cold, and they were warming themselves, and Peter also was with them, standing and warming himself. High priest's question, okay, we go move on to verse 25. Now, Simon Peter was standing and warming himself. They said to him, you are also not one of his disciples, are you? I am not. And one of the slaves of the high priest, being a relative of the one who Peter cut the ear off of, said, did I not see you in the garden with him? And Peter immediately denied it again, and immediately the cock crowed. So here we have it. You have Peter, and it says here, another disciple. Who is that other disciple? We believe it to be John, because John's the only one who records this. John had, probably because he was a son of Zebedee, his father was a rich fisherman, likelihood there was some kind of a knowledge of the wealthy people up the north, and so that's probably how they, but he had access. And Peter follows along. Friends, to me, Peter is, he's a great man of God. He leaves his nets and follows Christ. He confesses, you are the Christ, the Son of God. We know that he would go on to be one of the people to change the world. But right now, he was also a guy who said, you know what, these other guys, they will probably deny you, but not me. I will never deny you. You see, he had a great sense of his own confidence, a great confidence in his own strength of his will. And I think that this passage is telling us, there's only so far that you can go in the power of your own might. There's only so far that you go in the power of your own will. We can make all kinds of promises. God, I will never do that again. How many of you have ever said that? Yeah. I'll never do that again. I'll never think that again. Why did I do that? And we find that we have great capacities, willpower, but there's a limit to that power. And we find here a great disciple just saying, you know, Lord, I don't want ever to desert you. And he tried so hard, and even when he was found out the first time, he didn't flee, right? He stuck in there. And even the second time, he didn't turn and run. They make this charcoal fire, and he's warming himself. Can you imagine? He's hearing and seeing. He has to be close enough, because we know then when he denies Christ for the third time, Jesus turns and they catch each other's eye. Tells us that in Luke chapter 22, 61. And the Lord turned and looked at Peter, and Peter remembered the words of the Lord, how he had told him, before the cock crows today, you will deny me three times. And Peter went out and wept bitterly. Now, how do we get this story? We get this story because it's part of Peter's testimony. Yeah, I'm the guy who thought I could do it on my own strength. Yeah, I'm the guy who could have said something. Maybe I could have made a difference, but I chickened out. I'm the guy who stood around that charcoal fire. I want to ask you the question. You ever been around a charcoal fire like that? Not literally. You're in that place where everyone else around you is not a believer. In fact, they're just the opposite. They're trying to figure out reasons why not to be a believer. And there you have a chance. And, hey, aren't you one of his disciples? And you don't stand up for Christ. The Apostle Paul would say, I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Christ. Maybe in your own life, your willpower has gotten you so far. But basically, when you've had a chance to say, yeah, I'm a believer in Christ. And I realize this for some people in their place of work, to mention that they're a Christian will cause some persecution. But the only way that we can get the word out is to simply do what Jesus tells us to do. I want you to be my witnesses. And I will give you the strength and the words to do so. There may be other things in our life, the charcoal fire of the world that we're around, and we're tempted to compromise, maybe morally. maybe compromise in relationships. Because it would become so obvious if someone said, hey, we're going to this party, now why don't you go with us? And you said, no, I'm not going to go. I remember the very first time as a young believer when I had to do that. Man, it was tough. I'm not patting myself on the back because there's plenty of times I've been around the charcoal fire and I've denied Christ. I can't speak for you. But basically, it's those times when I have trusted in my own willpower. So here's some lessons I learned from this about Peter. One is that God can still use people who make mistakes. Amen? Doesn't throw us to the sideline. There's a magazine article, the magazine that put this down. It goes, just in case you find any mistakes in this magazine, please remember that they were put there for a purpose. We try to offer something for everyone. Some people are always looking for mistakes, and we did not want to disappoint you. I'm going to tell you this. There's no perfect husband. There's no perfect wife. There's no perfect kid. There's no perfect pastor. There's no perfect anything. The only one who's perfect is Jesus. And let us not cheapen ourselves by making excuses. Because we see here the response of Peter was this. He went out and wept bitterly. He had denied Jesus. Another thing I learned about this is when we fall, we need to realize that we can get up. Proverbs 24:16. For the righteous man may fall seven times and what? Rise again. Psalm 37:24. Though he falls, he will not be utterly cast down, for the Lord upholds him with his right hand. You need to know that when you fall, the Lord's there to catch you. You need to know also, too, that I read the scriptures, and it's filled with God using broken things. Friends, we got broken. We put ourselves back into his hands. We say, oh, Lord, please, have mercy on me. Use my life. Help me to walk in your strength next time that I would not deny you or deny your way. Last thing I think we learn from this is watch out for the charcoal fires in the world. Let's go. Keep going here. I want you to show you this first, Peter. This is right, Rembrandt. Rembrandt, no, go back. Rembrandt, stop. The face of Peter. You look at a self-portrait of Rembrandt, he uses his own face to depict Peter, denying. I like that. Okay, keep going. Charcoal fire. Watch out for the charcoal fires of the world. Everybody around, you realize you're outnumbered. And here's what Peter forgot. When you're around the charcoal fire, though you may be the only believer, you are not outnumbered. For greater is he that's in me than he that's in the world. You may be here today and you're wrestling. You're around some charcoal fire. You're wrestling with what you should do with Christ. Should you make him Lord, allow him to be Lord of certain areas of your life? Maybe it's an area of relationships. Maybe it's a time of struggle and you've been working on your own power and strength and not trusting in his. And this may be the day you say, oh Lord, please, around this charcoal fire that I'm facing, help me to not be ashamed of you, to not deny you. I believe this is if we determine in this place, in this time, that even amongst the charcoal fires of this world, that we will stand for Christ. That our friends, our neighbors, our countrymen will hear the truth and thousands and millions will be saved. But it will happen when we stop depending on our own strength and depend on the strength of the Lord.